Arrangements Committee to order. John will call the roll.
Representatives Carlson.
Here.
Belter. Mock.
Here.
Onsted.
Here.
Vigasa.
Here.
Senators Wardner.
Here.
Herbley.
Here.
Heckman.
Here.
Holmberg.
Here.
Klein.
Here.
Schneider. There is a quorum, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We didn't pass out copies. We've gone through this, I think, at every meeting. Bottom line is you have authority to grant permission to use the chambers and the committee rooms during the interim. And we have a request before you that's come before you regularly in the past, and you last actually approved the request at your last September meeting for this coming year. This will be for 2017 for the North Dakota High School Activities Association to use the House and Senate chambers and legislative committee rooms for the 2017 North Dakota High School Activities Association State Student Congress on Thursday and Friday, Thursday and Friday, November 2nd and 3rd, 2017.
We need a motion to approve that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions about that? The State Student Congress will be held on November 3rd and 4th, 2016 in our chamber.
Yeah, and this is for 17, Mr. Chairman. You already approved 2016.
16 is the 3rd and 4th?
That's correct, yep.
Okay, just checking on the dates here.
And that was approved in September at your previous meeting.
Your motion to approve?
Mr. Chairman, I would so move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second by Representative Bach. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is approved. And the next one is, I think that if you follow through your pamphlet of stuff, you'll find some memorandums on this stuff as we go. And Mr. Bjornson on the invitation to bid for the photography services.
Mr. Chairman, as you stated, there is a memorandum on that. It's something that each interim you review and approve so that we can let bids out for photography services during the session. Last session, the photographer was the photographer that you'd gone back to after several years. This bid spec would basically replicate what you've done in the past. We would ask them we'd send it out in the relatively near future, ask them to respond by September 2nd with their bids. As I recall, last interim, there were about a half dozen or so bids that came in, which was, I think, slightly more than in the past. The specs, you know, provide in that first paragraph, the decision to accept a bid will depend on the quality of the bid, not necessarily the lowest price. So you have the ability to review the bids and look at the quality of work and take that into consideration. The general specifications are the same as they've been in the past, two poses, two wallet size, color photos for each member. Pictures will be taken on Monday through Wednesday, December 5th through the 7th during the organizational session. They would have to return the digital image by Wednesday, December 21st. There would be retakes that would be possible during the first week of the session, January 3rd. Through the 6th, 2017, and then by February 27th, I believe, or 17th, they would again deliver the individual pictures and digital images to our office. And finally, they would create the composite, which would be approved by the Secretary of the Senate and the Chief Clerk of the House. Mr. Chairman, the only thing that was changed in these bid specs from previously would be the deadline dates to match appropriate times during the legislative session.
Any questions? Pretty standard of what we've always done. Need a motion to approve this, to send it out?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a motion to approve this? Senator Holmberg, motion. Senator Heckman, seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Next item on the agenda is the staff on the invitation to bid for secretarial telephone and bill and journal room services.
Again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there is a memorandum that's entitled exactly what the chairman read. Again, we would require the bids to be submitted by September 2nd of this year. This committee will likely, I expect, meet in September, later September. The budget section is scheduled for the 29th of September. So that's a possibility for the chairman and your consideration. Just as a matter of background, all the employees would be located in the bill and journal room area. In the past, before last session, as you recall, some of the phone operators were upstairs where the Senate committee clerks were last session. Everybody would be located, co-located in this, just in the bill and journal room down the hall here. During the last session, they initially provided 3.5 employees that were assigned to that area, one of whom was the on-site supervisor. Beginning with February 9th of 2015, the contractor provided 2.5 employees because, in part, there was less work and one of the employees had found another job. So they were able to continue at that level of 2.5 employees after that point. And this invitation to bid would allow that option going forward. If the work isn't enough for 3.5 people, they could reduce that as they did in 2015. You know, the services provided, I think you're all pretty familiar with. They will prepare correspondence and envelopes for you, news releases, other miscellaneous documents, including testimony and charts, floor speeches. They're available to fax materials. They receive information that comes into you. They answer the telephone, the watch line that comes in, and just for your information, and we'll discuss that briefly later, too, if you approve the watch line. But if you see that last paragraph, or the middle, first paragraph in the middle of the page under telephone messages services, in 2001, there were nearly 20,000 calls into your watch line. Last session, there were 755, which, you know, comes down to about 10 calls a day. So with the, you know, increase in access to email and other ways, it's significantly reduced that amount. And in case you're wondering what it costs to maintain that line, there are three phone lines that are installed. It's $10 a month per line, so it's pretty minimal charge for a phone hookup to deal with that.
And we have three lines because?
Because that's what to roll through if there are multiple
have to
calls.
Have three?
Mr. Chairman, you don't have to have three. It's just been all it has been in the past, so that if one is busy, the second will pick up. It also can go to a voicemail, as I understand. So, members of the committee, near the bottom of the page, they also provide bill and journal room services, hand out bills and journals, put the mailbox, fill the mailboxes for the subscribers to the services that you provide. On the page two, just background for 2015, under that contract, all the services were provided by those 3.5 employees at a rate of $577.60 a day. There was also a contract for the time between the organizational session when the bills start to become pre-filed and the beginning of the session. Last time that was about a 17-day period, and that was paid out at $162.40 a day. And that's basically just setting up the room and starting to sort the bills as they come in. As I mentioned earlier, they used a flexible work scheduling and they reduced the number of employees to reflect the workload, and they actually only billed at $553 per day for 78 legislative days. So it was about almost a $24 day reduction in costs because of that reduction in employees over the full period. The general specifications that are on pages 2 and through the remainder of the memo remain the same as in the past, the same type of requirements that they be have service from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. each legislative day. Fridays, they're allowed to leave early if you adjourn early. They can leave at 3:30. That they do have to, on Fridays, if you submit a press release by noon, they have to have that done before they leave and return. We, rather than having them start right after the organizational session when there aren't very many bills yet in the process, we did change the date on page 3, the number 1 there, that they would start services on December 12th and continue them through December 31st with that one person in the bill and journal room. And then they would resume full services on the first day of the session, Tuesday, January 3rd, and they would remain at that level through the end of the session. Page 4, the bid proposal that we are submitting for your consideration is again for 3.5 employees, one on-site supervisor, 2 full-time employees, and then the one, if necessary, part-time employee that would work during the meet of the day, 11 to 3 p.m. We left the pay range. In the past, you've included this hourly wage requirement in the bid specs so that there would be a minimum pay for the people involved. The on-site supervisor, we left at $15, and the other employees, we left at $14.50. The supervision, the contractor's responsible for the supervision and the discipline or dismissal of employees. They have to monitor their employees they also require employees to sign non-disclosure information. So if they're doing correspondence for you, they're held to the same level of confidentiality as we are. And I think finally, Mr. Chairman, that the last page is the actual bid proposal that we will submit to them. We're saying 3.5 employees for approximately 75 legislative days. That'll vary depending, obviously, on how long it takes you to do your work. The second line is the 14-day pre-session time period, which we reduced from 17 days 2 years ago. And they have to list their pay ranges. So, Mr. Chairman, if you have any questions, I'm happy to try to answer them at this point.
Any questions? Is there anything we should be doing differently would be my question. I mean, things have really changed over the years, and we have downsized a lot. But, Representative Bigasov?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, how many services bid for this job last time?
Mr. Chairman, one. And Representative Bigasov, one bid was received.
Is it? And everything else do we list a salary range that they have to pay?
Mr. Chairman, this is the only thing that would be applicable to, and I don't know how long that's been part of the bid, but we left it in for your consideration. It could certainly be removed or changed. And
it seems odd to me that we would dictate what they had to, when we have a private bid, that we would dictate what they had to pay their people, but I don't have any heartburn. I'm assuming that's what they'd have to pay to get anybody anyway, but it just seems odd that we would dictate that number. Are there any things in here, John, that you see from your day-to-day management procedure that are things that are just not relevant anymore? I mean, when you look at all the services provided, like the watch line, I mean, I understand redundancy, so you don't sit on hold, but 3 lines, even though it's no money, makes no sense to me when you only have 750 calls for the whole session, that you have 3 lines sitting there.
Mr. Chairman.
I mean, 2 lines would have been great funny, because that way, if you did happen to have 2 of those 750 calls at the same time, they'd get rolled into the second line. But I know it's not big money, but just that seems to be outdated to me.
Mr. Chairman, and we will have an item on the agenda later that has consideration of the watch line. That may be correct that 2 lines would be fine, that there are only 3 people working in the room, so it's certainly a consideration. The number of calls, as I recall, the last session, the highest volume day, there were 34 calls.
Well, when we, those of us been here a while, remember when we had the little sticks on our desk and all of our, those messages would be stuck on there and you'd call them back and we got a lot of messages. But now it's, phone calls are really rare that we get for the process. That's why I'm looking at the rest of this. Is there anything else that we're doing in here that, that could be changed or should be changed from the way we do business now with our iPads and with our email and all those type of things?
Mr. Chairman, I nothing comes to mind right now. We did take out as one of the requirements that they mail the bills and journals out, because that was something they decided at the last meeting that we would no longer have that mailing option because no one was availing themselves of it. So we took that out of the requirements that they would be doing. But beyond that, I'm not aware of anything.
Okay. And we only had one bid for these services anyway?
Mm-hmm.
And that was some temporary. I'm trying to think of the name of the company, but it's
Experian.
Experian. Okay. So what happens if nobody bids?
That was a question, Mr. Chairman, that we were kind of worried about last time.
That'd be quite of a pickle we're in if nobody bids. We'd be hiring people ourselves to do the job. Any other discussion, any thoughts, any changes you want to make to this before we approve it? If you think it's pretty thorough and up to date for what we're doing today, I'm okay with that.
I think we've kept it fairly current, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any, they don't accept the motion to approve?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we approve the proposal.
Is there a second?
Second.
Representative Mock seconded. Cool. Motion by Representative Wardner.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, can we take a roll call to cover both of these?
Yep.
Okay.
We'll do a roll call vote.
All right. Representatives Carlson?
Yes.
Mock?
Yes.
Onstead?
Yes.
Vigasaw?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Yes.
Herbele?
Yes.
Heckman?
Yes.
Holmberg?
Aye.
Klein?
Aye.
Schneider? Motion carried.
Next item on the agenda, discussion of 2017 legislative session arrangements.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll probably be asking for several more of those quick roll calls. The first item is the chaplaincy and the legislative tour guide programs. Historically, you have approved participation in both of those programs, and I'm just going to grab my note here if I could. The chaplaincy program is administered by the Bismarck pastor here, as you're aware, and they work with local ministerial associations to coordinate the scheduling of chaplains from around the state for opening prayers in both houses each day. What our office does is send a letter and a packet of information out to all of your members during the organizational session that describes the program and asks if they would like to schedule clergy to serve as the chaplain of the day. We typically set a deadline of December 31st on that so that the we can have that organized in advance. Under the program, the chaplains paid an honorarium of $25 per day for their service. The tour guide program is, again, a program that's been historically worked through our office where we hire a temporary tour guide to coordinate programs for the high school groups during the legislative session. And both of those have been in operation for a number of years. The same individual has coordinated the chaplaincy program for several years, and we haven't spoken with him, but if you approve that program, that would be the expectation. I assume that we would visit with the same person to try to organize it.
First, we had a little bit of a snafu last time during the session, but normally it's been really good. So I would just hope that they would take into mind that Good Friday is a very special day, and hopefully we don't have the wrong thing scheduled. If you would make that note for me, please.
Mr. Chairman, I will.
That was very difficult. We welcomed them back on another day that didn't work out, but that was not. And that was one of those things that they don't write into your job description when you take it. So, do you want a motion for that one?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like a motion.
So the motion would be to have the same procedure on the chaplaincy program as we've had in the past. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
There's a motion by Senator Wardner, Representative Bigassaw seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, well, let's take a vote.
Okay. Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Mock?
Yes.
Onstead?
Yes.
Bigassaw?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Herbele?
Aye.
Heckman?
Aye.
Holmberg?
Aye.
Klein?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
Make sure you add that one side note on there for me, would you?
Okay.
All right, next one would be the Legislative Tour Guide Program.
Mr. Chairman, any questions about how the program works? We try to answer those, but it's been we just have one person who comes in and organizes the tours for all the high school groups. He has notified the schools of the availability of the program, and then sets up a schedule to guide the tours through the legislative wing during their day in the building.
I don't think there's any question. I think that's a great idea. It's a good program. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, does that individual try to schedule so that you don't have too many schools coming at any one day, or do they just facilitate whenever the schools can come?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bigassaw, maybe Jim can better answer that than I.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bigassaw, he works with the schools. Invariably, they all want to come at the same time. So he tries to avoid that, but sometimes it's unavoidable because they have conflicts and there's good times for them and that kind of thing. But he does try to get them to schedule it evenly throughout the session, avoiding some of the conference committee times where, it's maybe not the best. But he does work with the schools to try and do that. And
Mr. Chairman, Jim, that number, that phone number, is that readily available somewhere in the...
For the tour guide?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it should be listed on our website. But we actually send a letter to the high school principals in the state and with all that contact information, but we can provide that to legislators too if that's your interest.
Well, I think it comes and then they call and says, who do we contact and so on. And I think it probably goes to a high school principal. The high school principal doesn't quite get it to the senior advisor, whoever's bringing that group up. And it's probably a loss in communication there. So as long as it's posted somewhere on our website, that's good.
Any other discussion on that? If not, we'll take a motion to approve.
So moved. Second.
Senator Holmberg, seconded by Senator Klein. Take a roll call vote.
Representatives Carlson?
Yep.
Mock?
Aye.
Onstead?
Yes.
Bigassaw?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Herbele?
Aye.
Heckman?
Yes.
Holmberg?
Aye.
Klein?
Aye.
Schneider? Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list here is the purchase of brief bags. As you recall, last session, you departed from the previous practice and purchased a heavier duty, I guess in my opinion, much more attractive bag, and at a higher cost, with the expectation that those bags would remain in use for 4 years with each member. And I think, to my knowledge, have held up pretty well. So the suggestion from our end would be that we'd be authorized to purchase additional bags for the new members, and that everybody else should be able to continue using the bags that they were passed out after last session.
The new computer will fit in that bag?
Yes.
Both the iPad and the new computer? Okay. That makes sense. I mean, I wouldn't want another new one this year. But if the new members come in, I think that they should be able to have that option. Any discussion on that? So the motion would be that the bags be provided to the new members? I'd accept that motion. Senator Schneider moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Set, by Representative Mock.
Does that include someone who may come over from the house who already has a bag?
We're not getting that detail. That's ifs and buts.
I know.
I would assume that we wouldn't do it, but that would make sense to me. If we already have the bag and that style of bag, they should not be getting another. We'll take a roll call vote.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Mock.
Aye.
Onstead.
Yes.
Vigasa.
Yes.
Wardner.
Aye.
Herbele.
Aye.
Heckman.
Yep.
Holmberg.
Aye.
Klein.
Aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
Legislator stationary.
All right, Mr. Chairman. As you recall, the decision had been made to move away from purchasing stationery for each member and provide new electronic letterhead. I think for the most part that has worked fairly well. We haven't heard very many complaints about that. And, we bring before you your consideration of whether you want to continue with the electronic letterhead rather than purchasing individual paper for all members.
Senator Holmberg.
Because I think most members sent fewer and fewer paper letters out anyway.
I agree with that. I still have stuff from 97. I don't need any more. It's got the wrong committees, the wrong title, but I got it all. Any other discussion? So the motion would be to continue the same policy we have on electronic letterhead. Is there a motion? Senator Holmberg moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Herbele. Take a vote.
Representatives Carlson.
Yes.
Mock.
Aye.
Onstead.
Yes.
Vigasa.
Yes.
Senators Wardner.
Aye.
Herbele.
Aye.
Heckman.
Yes.
Holmberg.
Aye.
Klein.
Aye.
Schneider. All right.
Next.
So you print your envelope too. You don't get envelopes.
Correct.
Good. Right. I'm sure I've got a template.
There is a template available for the envelopes?
Nope.
How about supplying the envelopes? What do we do there? Okay. And I'm sure during session our computer somewhere is set up to handle that template for running the address on those envelopes. Okay. As long as it's accessible to people, if they can't figure out how to do it, we'll point them in the right direction. So Did we take a vote on that? We did.
Yes, you did, Mr. Chairman. Yep.
Yeah, we went backwards. Yeah. All right. Incoming watch line, sir. Yep.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, back to that. As I indicated earlier, the use of it has gone down significantly from 19, almost 20,000 in 2001 to 755 last session, with the highest day being 34 calls. As we indicate, there are three lines currently dedicated to that use at the cost of $10 per month, and it's as I understand, just part of the many phones that we activate during the session in the legislative wing.
So who's answering these again? The secretarial staff is?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Steckler, any comment why we need three lines?
Mr. Chairman, Jason Steckler, Administrative Services Division, members of the committee, we were just discussing, if my memory, which is failing me lately, serves correct, there was a reason why we stayed at three, because if we went down to two, there was no price break. But it's definitely something I think if the committee approves us continuing having a watch line, we'll do what's smart, and if we can go to two and save some money, we can do that.
So the motion would be to continue the service of the watch line and leave the number of lines up to you depending on the price. I mean, I'm okay with that. It's just that when you think, all I know is that the phone calls are not nearly as nasty as some of the emails. I mean, people have a lot more courage when they can send you an email and there's no face attached. So I'm not so sure we've progressed like we would have liked to on that particular front. But that's the way the things are going to go, and so I'm going to be more of that. I would guess this time we'll even have less watch lines calls than we've had in the past. Maybe a few elderly folks that are in computers, but the young kids sure aren't going to do it. They're going to send an email.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we do a pretty good job of scrutinizing all of our stuff, but when something comes down to $30 a month for the 80 legislative days, that probably is something we could have looked into, and I apologize for not having the perfect answer, but we'll definitely look into it. And if we can go down to two, I think two would suffice, and if we get a price break, that's great.
Okay, the motion would be to continue the service. Is there a motion? So moved by Senator Klein. Is there a second?
Second.
Representative Bigassaw. Take the vote.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Mock.
Aye.
Onstead,
yes.
Bigassaw,
yes.
Senators Wardner,
aye.
Herbally,
aye.
Heckelman,
yes.
Holmberg,
aye.
Klein,
aye.
Schneider.
Aye.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I think we can lump the remainder of these bullet points into one item to discuss and one vote, hopefully. The first is the State of the State Address. Traditionally, it's been given on the first legislative day. That would be January 3rd. The State of the Judiciary, typically given on the second legislative day, the Wednesday the 4th. The Tribal State Relations Message, when it's been given, has been given on January 5th, the third legislative day. And then there are three statutorily required group reports or joint meetings. One, the Agricultural Commodity Promotion Group's report to the Senate Agriculture Committees. It's supposed to be done between the first and the, or required by the 10th legislative day. The Agriculture Commission reports to the joint committees, which is just a report to the committees on the pesticide container disposal program. And then finally, the which standing committees would receive the Commissioner of Commerce report. That's generally been the IBL committees, and that also is required by the 10th legislative day. So, Mr. Chairman, what we did is we put dates in there based upon this session's timing, and with the last three bullet points in particular, put the dates that would coincide with when the committees that have typically had those reports given to them when they'd be meeting. So the agricultural reports would be on Friday, January 6th, and the Commerce Commissioner's report Monday the 9th, if you followed previous practice.
Any comments, questions on those? Representative Bigassaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In our Government Finance Committee, we are going through what duties that the budget section should do on a regular basis, and we're paring that back a little bit, some of the things that maybe aren't so necessary. Is this something that we should look at in the future on these particular reports? Are these, is this something that we really need to have before joint committee meetings, or could it be just be presented to the committees in written form rather than having a joint? Just food for thought, because we're going through that with budget section and kind of looking at some of the things that maybe are a little outdated that we do.
Well, from a bill assignment perspective, I was actually glad that the Agricultural Committee got something to do. They have
You know, Mr. Chairman, I have sat through the commodity groups presentation 10 times, and certainly there's really not a lot of discussion. Everybody wants to blow their horn about all the good stuff they've done. If it comes to an issue or a commodity where there's been problems, that's really not the area where we're going to hit them on it anyway. I guess we're just there to listen to the report and the fact that what they've done with the checkoff dollars primarily. And so it is, we start at 8 o'clock, it goes right till noon. It's 4 hours. You've got there's about 12 commodities. Everybody wants to talk about how good the things they've done. So I don't know whether or not it's important or not. And we do get the backup with, we get a huge portfolio of information also. So just to me, it's certainly interesting, but not necessary.
Any other thoughts on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, in you're correct. Senator Klein is correct on that. It's I think it still has a purpose, because each of those commodity groups kind of give their thoughts of where they're really going with all those different crops. I think along with this discussion, we really need to discuss the Ag Policy Committee. Do we keep it a separate Ag Policy Committee moving forward, or do we combine some of the energy things and natural resources things and throw some of those things into energy? I think their workload isn't real long through the session, but yet it's important. We need that. But further, it seems like other committees, some of those things probably could be transferred, and it's just to have a discussion. Maybe not now is not the time to discuss it, but I think moving forward, but the reports are good, because the people giving those reports feel good that they are coming and able to talk about their industry and their particular crops or products.
I don't know that we have to gavel in order to hear his budget address.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a couple of comments. We do schedule hearings for that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, that first week, though they are limited. The A committees meet Wednesday, get organized, hear some interim bills, maybe a couple of agency bills.
But they can meet without gambling, you know?
Right, and that could apply anytime, really, so.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you make a good point, and that was going to be my question. We can still have committee hearings even if we don't gavel in. And do we have to gavel in to have the state of the state? And I know it's kind of like a ceremony. We do it.
But. You know, that's the first day that you convene. So we'd have to kind of look at some of those issues, but you'd have to actually convene, I think, before. But maybe you could take a break for a couple of days, you know, if you wanted to. But maybe we should look at some options at the next committee meeting.
Well, I just think that those meetings are not as productive as we could have them when we get into crossover time, when we get into the end of the session time. I think that those days would be better used than to have 3 days basically of ceremonial speeches. And the committees can still meet, but I don't think it's right to gavel in it and have those days gone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe this question for Jim. How does support staff pay work when we don't gavel in? So if we were to not gavel in during those 3 days, would staff still be paid for the compensated for those days? Especially if we are going to have committees functioning, we will still expect all staff to be there. So is that something that this committee would have to address, or that a motion would have to be passed on, say, the first legislative day to make sure all staff is paid for those days worked?
Yeah, we want to make it clear whether you wanted them paid or not. But if the clerks and those people are working with committees, they'd have to be paid.
Yeah,
that's what you'd want to do.
We motions to pay them when we haven't gaveled in,
right.
Or
right.
Whatever.
Right.
So we could do those motions to make sure they are paid. But that would have to be done.
Yeah,
that would have to be
yeah.
done. Yeah. And the way I see it, the worst that would have to happen is that we gavel in and call ourselves to order. And then the second 2 days, we do not gavel in, but we have the reports. And we still have our committees.
I think that's
the way I look at it, that we'd be saving 2 days on this process. But we still have to come in and have to say we are officially in session. But then after that, I think those other 2 days should not be gaveled in. Because I think we should save those days and accomplish something with them.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think we'd want to look at the logistics of that, because those state of the judiciary and state of the tribal, those get printed in the journal, and if you're not gaveled in, you wouldn't have a journal. So we'd have to work through those.
Yeah, but we could accept those as a report and put them in the journal.
Right.
I mean, there's lots of ways physically to do that, because we're still going to hear the same thing. It's just a matter of if it's in printed form for somebody or not. Yes, Senator Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there any reason why on the second day, which would be on Wednesday, judiciary and tribal state couldn't be on the same day? One in the morning, one in the afternoon?
Oh, you could do that way. We've never done it because the natives always want to have a reception, and so does the judges. You know how they have their deal in the hallway? I'm not so sure they think you were being snubbed on that thing or not. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was thinking the same thing, that we gavel in on the first day and have the state of the state. And then we could, the next 2 days, not gavel.
Have committees and have the
general session. But I think we need to gavel in when we officially start the session. I think that's important.
Could you check into that? Minority Party, what's your thought on that? Mac? Senator Schneider, I'm sorry.
Hey. I guess my concern is what you just raised, Mr. Chairman, is the snubbing aspect of things. As long as our, you know, the co-equal branch of government, the judiciary, doesn't feel like they're being snubbed because they're not officially speaking to a joint session of the legislature, it certainly makes sense as a mechanical matter to save those days. They're in short supply at the end of the session and seem like an overabundance at the beginning of the session. But I do worry, you know, about looking like we're snubbing a co-equal branch of government, or, you know, these sovereign nations that are existing within our borders too. And for that reason, I would certainly be inclined to give each their day, in terms of the judiciary speaking one day, the tribe speaking another. But if there's a way to save those days without offending anybody, we should do it.
Yeah, I think we should look at it. I just bring it up because we've all been through the crunch time. And those days when we, it's just frustrating as you're not getting anything done, but you're checking off the calendar. Representative Vigasov?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The other thing it would do if we didn't count those days, it, then the entire legislative calendar is off. All of the deadlines that we have for bill introduction and everything is all going to be moved back. And sometimes those are meant to land on certain days, and it's going to put things in the middle of the week and so forth.
So they're just by number, so they could end up.
They can end up any day, but it would adjust the entire calendar.
Adjustments because they are in statute, are they not? The number of the day is not the time when it falls on the calendar. I mean, day 29 doesn't make a difference what day 29 is.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. So it would just be the calendar that would need to be adjusted. Probably the bill draft deadlines would be the concern, I think, from our point of view. They've typically been Mondays, which allows us the weekend to get everything that comes in to you back on Monday. If that were a Wednesday, it might be a little interesting challenge at times. So we would maybe look at hoping that you could keep those deadlines on a Monday.
Senator Holmberg.
The facts are, though, that those days, if we didn't count Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the legislators could continue to do their getting ready with bill drafts, et cetera. Would you not consider then, if you didn't count these 3 days, move back the legislative day that you have to have the bills in by 3 days? Because those days will still be there. Otherwise, you're adding 3 days for every House member to get an extra few bills in, and the same way with Senate. And then you've got the issue of crossover, as far as the day is concerned.
Well, I think logistically we can work it out if in fact, because we can move those around. But I do agree with your point that they're going to be here. They're going to be working on the bills. We should probably reconsider what that deadline would be for when those bill introduction deadlines hit. Because, idle hands are not good hands sometimes. They have many more good ideas that need to be introduced if we don't change those deadlines a little bit. But I think those kind of logistical things, as you look through it, I think we need to look at that and see if there's a possibility. If there's not, we got to let it go. But I think it's time we look at that. Senator Klein.
Mr. Chairman, I think the idea being we're saving the 2 days for the end because whether we count the judiciary or the tribal announcements or speeches as a day, everybody's still going to be doing bills and working on the stuff, and I don't see why we would want to change that side portion of it. The bill deadline should still be the same because everybody's here. Just because we didn't gavel in and push our button, and we're going to be here, and the committees are going to be working in the morning. Let's leave the calendar the way it is, but the only thing it would be, they're going to have to make that arrangement as to what day that actually is.
And I think that was Senator Holmberg's point as well, is that as long, we're going to, whether the calendar says this or not, there's still the same number of days access to get bills drafted. Depends on if these guys have to deal with it either way. Representative Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So for the purposes of today's discussion, we wouldn't have to decide whether or not we gavel in on those days. I think the only thing that the motion is made to approve the remainder of the items for the bullets on the legislative calendar. The only change we'd have to make as it's written on the agenda is to overstrike second legislative day and third legislative day in reference to the state of the judiciary and tribal state relations message. Everything else seems to be aligned because it's all written in code. Can we get a report from John and Jim and council to find out what changes to the calendar would need to be made for in terms of rules if we weren't to gavel in for those 2 days?
Yes.
And can we make that decision at the September meeting?
We'll make that part of your motion.
Okay.
We'll approve as it's stated here, subject to getting the clarification on those 2 days.
Sure. So moved.
And the adjusted dates if they have to be. You follow that motion, John?
Representative Mock, did you exclude those, or you just exclude the dates on those addresses?
Right. So the dates would stay. It's just the reference to the legislative day, subject to whatever report we get from you and approved at the next LPA meeting.
Okay.
Is there a second to that?
Representative
Austin, comment?
Just my comment is, what was the reason why appropriations seemed to, several sessions ago, that they seemed to have met almost 3 or 4 days prior to anything, prior to that? Jeff, you recall that?
Yeah.
Why did they actually met about 5 days prior to even the start of the session?
Representative Delzer?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, if I remember right, that was done to get the overviews that you normally did at that time all out of the way. It caused enough consternation that it hasn't happened since then, and I don't think there's any desire to do that since then.
But mostly it was overviews, if I remember correctly. Get all those agencies in and try and save our days when we're actually working on numbers instead of overviews. But that hasn't happened in the last 2-3 sessions, though.
It's been quite a while, but I thought that wasn't there. Still care of
it. Yeah, I think David, our Senator Nethink, was the one who instigated those dates. Anything else? The motion is there. Basically, we'll accept what's here, subject to those 2 dates on there, whether or not that can be worked out through the calendar.
Correct.
All those, let me see, we'll take a roll call vote.
I need a second.
We need a second. Second, okay. Holmberg, Senator Holmberg.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Mock.
Aye.
Onstead.
Yes.
Pigasaw.
Yes.
Senators Wardner.
Aye.
Erbely.
Aye.
Heckelman.
Yes.
Holmberg.
Aye.
Klein.
Aye.
Schneider.
Okay, the Mr. Forrester, we're done on the first page, right?
That's correct.
Mr. Forrester, the regarding the computer replacement program and the progress of Legislative Committee Room audio system upgrades.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Kyle Forrester, the IT manager for the legislative branch. For the computer replacements, we have now rolled into the distribution phase, so many of you have brought in your equipment today for a replacement. We're replacing the iPads and the laptops, as you recall. That's moving along fine. We'll plan on continuing to do that as the interim committees come into Bismarck. We'll replace as many as we can, so try and get as many as we can before the term ends. In regard to the iPads, we did give the legislators a choice of 2 cases. This is one of the cases, and it flips open. That's one case. I'll lay it here if you guys want to look at it, because anybody that brought in their equipment today, then you'll have that choice. The other case that we have, and we could route it around too, I guess, if you want. The other case that we brought, chose, there's a zipper case where in the inside you have your iPad, there's a spot for your pencil, and there's slots for business cards, and you can also slide in a notepad, a regular portfolio pad. And this guy here, this case, the iPad flips out and you can set it in, so you can use it to type at an angle if you want. And this case here also allows you to attach the Apple keyboard and leave it attached and close up the case.
They both have a seal on them, I see. That's very nice.
Yes, the seals were added to the cases.
Did you forget whose it was? Or?
Well, we'll cover that with your image on the screen. The other thing, and we did put screen protectors on the iPads this time around just to make sure, especially with this case, so we don't scratch any screens. We'd rather scratch the low-cost screen protector. As far as the other change that we made since we rolled this out, because of the iPad and the Microsoft Office suite being available for the iPad, we did go with Office 365 for legislators on both your laptop and your iPad. So there'll be a much more robust Excel and Word application on your iPad, so you'll have that. That does come with a little bit of an ongoing cost for that. So we're covering that through our software that we had normally part of our budget.
Yes.
is there going to be then any kind of issue with what was already on the laptop being converted into this new system? Will we be losing some stuff, or will we as a consumer see no difference?
You should see no difference. Any documents that you have on your laptops or your iPads, they are being restored onto your new equipment. So the way Office 365 works, there is a product called OneDrive where you can share a document between the two devices. So, but on any documents that were on your laptop would still be on your laptop drive. You would have to copy them into OneDrive if you want to do it that way. We also do have a product called ShareFile that will have similar capabilities for sharing between the two applications. In regard to any other questions on the distribution? Yes, sir.
Not on the distribution, but on last time we talked about potential of purchasing the iPad Max?
Correct.
And
yes, the iPad.
Is there a price been determined? And
correct. At the last meeting, you voted and approved the iPads were $200, and the laptops were $250. In the emails that I've been sending out, there is a form in there that you can print out and sign and fill out to do the purchase, and just write a check to the Legislative Council for that. And then the way it works is your iPad, if you choose to purchase the iPad, as soon as your new one is set up, we will give you the old one back. But with the laptops, we are going to hold those for 30 to 60 days just to make sure that all your files came across correctly and to make sure that if there's any application issues based on, make sure your new laptop is good because we have to wipe, we do wipe both devices. So, but the new iPad is restored with exactly what you had on the old one.
And then what's left on the old one?
On the old one, it'll be just like a brand new iPad out of the box where you'll go through the settings and set it up like a new iPad.
But there's nothing to purchase?
Just the, no, there's nothing to purchase. It'll
so
be
like
the,
if I take it home and want to connect to my Wi-Fi,
you'll have
the house and go on the Internet.
Yep, just tap the settings and connect to Wi-Fi and join your Wi-Fi at home.
Okay. And who do we let know if we want to do that? Can we do that today when we pick up?
Yeah, we have forms upstairs. When you pick up your new equipment, if you want to purchase the old ones, just let the IT staff know, and there's a form they'll have you fill out.
Transition has been smooth so far with those that are
So far, there's been a couple of issues, and surely we'll probably run into one or two more. Your new laptops, of course, have Windows 10, which has been out since last fall. So we're still learning more things about it. Microsoft has a store where you can download apps, so we ran into that a little bit, an issue with that, but we're working through that this week. So, but if you do have, if you get your new equipment, if you do have any issues, give us a call and we'll help you out. In regard to the committee rooms, the new sound systems have been installed in all the committee rooms. We received some very positive feedback from the users of these rooms, and especially in regard to one of the features that we added into the room. The rooms now have a dialer, a phone dialer, that's part of the sound system. So if somebody wants to make a conference call meeting, then essentially when they use the microphones in the room in combination with that phone conferencing dialer to make that outbound call, you get a very, everybody in the room can hear quite well, and even the people on the call. So we've had very positive feedback on that. So that's also set up in the rooms. The other thing that we did with the new sound systems that are in all the committee rooms, we also put press feeds in each room. So now it's not just the Harvest and the Rough Rider room that have press feeds, so they'll be able to come in and plug into jacks either on the table or on the wall. Each room is a little bit different, but we did put in a pair of press feeds in each sound system in each room, so if there's something going on, they'll be able to get a good audio recording. And that's all I have.
Remind me which rooms we were doing again.
We did all of them.
So every committee room has been updated now?
Correct.
And our new judicial wing room will have the same stuff?
Correct. That'll have a portable sound system, but it'll be at the same quality as all the rest of the committee rooms.
questions for Mr. Forrester? If not, thank you, Pat. Handout in your, in front of you dealing with that.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. There is a handout. This is a memorandum that's been updated that you received typically every summer leading up to the legislative session. What it does is summarizes the employee positions in the 2015 session, reviews proposed number of employee positions for the 2017 session. Just as a note, since employee positions peaked in 1993, the number of employees has been reduced from 136 to 84 last session. During the last interim, legislative management recommended a total of 84 employment positions, 38 Senate and 46 House employees to be employed during the 2015 session. During the session, the House actually employed three assistant committee clerks rather than two. The Senate did not employ a desk page. The House employed six pages rather than four. The Senate majority leader employed one staff assistant rather than two. And the House minority leader employed one staff assistant rather than two. Thus, it came out to the 84 total still, but there were 36 Senate employees and 48 House employees. The proposal going forward for the next session would be to have 37 Senate employees and 47 House employees, recognizing the realities of last session and keeping in mind that you typically have authorized four staff assistant positions for the majority leaders and four for the minority leaders. The Senate supply room coordinator would still be in there. There'd be a parking lot attendant for each house, and we'd keep Sergeant at Arms at the same level as previously. So the table one goes through the proposed number in 2015 and the actual number in 2015. As I mentioned earlier, the differences were the staff assistant to the majority leader. Instead of two being used, there was one, and the staff assistant to the minority leader, instead of two, there was one. And we kept the proposal going forward for 2017 at two for both of those. The desk page near the bottom of that list, last 2015, there was one authorized for each house. The Senate didn't have a desk page, so we left that off the proposal for the 2017. That's where you get to 37 and 47 as the proposed numbers, with a total again of 84. If you turn over to the next page, get past all those footnotes, which we kept in there just in part for a good historical perspective, if you want to see how things have changed. And the note at the bottom lists a number of reductions over the years in services that things have been changed, the way you've done things have changed, so the number of employees have been reduced significantly. Session employee compensation, just very quickly, there's a history going back to 1999 of pay increases. Generally over the last several sessions, the pay increases for the session employees has been more or less tied to the pay increases that were granted by the Legislative Assembly for state employees in general. Now in 2015, the pay increases were 4% and 3% that were authorized for 2013 and 14 increases. Now, if you look at Table 2, this time we're providing you some options. So we list the 2015 daily salary. Option A, is recognition of the state employee general increase that was given last year, 3%. Option B and Option C is the 3% and 3% increase, and then Option B is a 3% and 2%, and then A was just recognition of the one increase last year. And what we've done is you're well aware that the budget situation has changed, and we want to give you some options to to address that, not knowing how things will be going forward. So you have a 3% increase, you have a 3 and 2, and a 3 and 3. The difference is amount to, you know, approximately per employee on average about a $6 a day difference between a 3 and 0 and a 3 and 3. The total per day compensation, as you see, would increase from option A at $12,965 to option C at $13,345 for an overall, based on a 77-day session, approximately, you know, $30,000 difference based upon those options, or between those options. The total daily compensation in 2015 came to about $12,473. That didn't include the $1 per day session extra prior experience amount that was granted and has been granted over the last several sessions for experienced employees. And what that would be capped, or has been capped, at $10 additional per day. Once you decide on an option or a daily salary amount, we would go forward with preparing for the chairman of the, or the members of the employment committees and the chairman of the employment committees, a concurrent resolution that would set out the pay per position that you would consider during the initial part of the legislative session. The pay resolution doesn't list specific names so that you have some flexibility, but it does list each of the positions. It generally lists legislative assistant to cover several positions to give the flexibility to, you know, move people between a page or a information desk attendant or something like that. So we provide some flexibility in the pay resolution. So, Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to try to answer your questions on how we came to put this together, and or any questions about the content of it. And then we leave you with at least three options and perhaps more if you have other ideas.
Comments, thoughts? Senator Holmberg, any thoughts? I'm assuming we should give recommendation to one of the proposals there. I've heard rumors already from some of the past employment people that we have had on our employment committee, by the way, which is a very thankless job, that it could be very difficult to fill clerk positions this time. And I don't know that it's the money. I think it's that the way the workforce is set up and trying to find people who will work for 4 months. Senator Everly?
I have
two ladies that left. Okay, and it's probably going to take more effort on our part to get people who are willing to come in from outlying Bismarck area to work here. That means they will probably need to know somebody or have the connection, because otherwise, by the time you pay the rent and stay out of town for that length of time, there's really not any money in doing it. Yeah. So, In light of the economic conditions we appear to be facing, I think that the first proposal is a little bit of an increase, and I think that that'd be more than fair as we go into this session to propose, but I would need discussion and a motion to do that. So it'd be option A. They'd go from $169 a day for an assistant to $174, and from the parking lot guy from $3 a day. Assistance to the leaders and minority leaders would go up basically $5 a day over last time. The 3 and 2, I don't know if it's competitive or not, and I'm not sure that the salary is what detracts us from getting people for these positions, because they are, well, you sign on to a clerk, you've got a job in those committees. You have to be pretty dedicated to go in and do that work and to do it right, because you're thrown into the fire immediately. And to get people back would be our greatest asset, to get returning people, but we seem to have way more turnover than we've ever had in the past. So I need some direction where you would like to go with this, because as we start putting these committees together and they start looking for potential people, it'd be nice to know what they're going to be offered. Senator Klein?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and in light of the direction and the money we've got, or the money that we don't have, I would move option A.
Second. We have a motion and a second on option A. When you look at all of them, I mean, it's $1 million for the staff that we hire, basically $1 million, a few dollars either side of that for the session. It isn't like that's a budget breaker. But the point is, I think, as we have to deal with the issue of public employee salaries and benefits in the next session, we have to be very cautious where we're going here with this stuff. Is there any other discussion? We have a motion and a second on option A.
Would that include the additional prior service that you've done in the past?
My recommendation would be to encourage them to come back, absolutely. With the would you include that in your motion, Senator?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Second, Wood? Okay. I think that's an incentive. When you talk even $2 a day, and some people are up to $5 a day, you add it up, that's a big deal for having their loyalty to come back. Any other discussion? Rep. Johnston, any thoughts, comments?
Well, I agree with the comments.
Well, it was a scramble last time. They really had, and then they were moving people around, and it's guaranteed that somebody's going to quit after 2 days, and they find out what they actually get and what they have to do.
And I'm not really sure when they actually start to become really active, that employee committee. And maybe they need a notice should be sent out or something sooner that we're actively starting this.
We'll kick that into earlier than ever this year to try and fill those spots. All right, we'll take a vote if there's no other comments. Senator Herbley?
I assume that there is a training session for the clerks and so on.
John?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Herbley, that we do provide training prior to the session for the employees.
So, I mean, the people I talked to, I would tell them that you will properly get trained in. You won't be thrown into the deep end, so to speak.
Yeah, Senator Herbley, that's correct. And at the next meeting in September, we will provide you with a proposal for the orientation of employees and that final session preparation. So we'll have some dates established by that point.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Question. Refresh my memory. As I'm looking at the historical, how we've adjusted pay raises over the last several biennia, has that matched, has that been on par with how we've addressed state employee salaries and raises each year?
Yes.
So it's been consistent.
Yeah, we have had that discussion a number of years back, saying this is ridiculous trying to figure out how to do it every time. So we use that as our matrix to tie it to. So who knows where that salary is going to be, but for now we're going to go with it. Will be with option A of the 3 and the O, which would be basically the 3% raise over what they had last time.
And that's if I may continue, so Mr. Chairman, can a person read the tea leaves and assume that this is what we're going to, state employees will start to see in the in any initial pay increase?
Well, I would hope that they wouldn't associate those two together, because we just use that as a metrics, but I think we need to, instead of saying zero and zero because we don't know where we're at,
right?
I think that it should be encouraging that we've set that 3% aside. I have no idea. It has no tie to what that will be. That's way too early to look at that. But they need to know what they're going to make. So at least we can always readjust our formula if we can. But they need to know what their salary is going to be if you're going to offer them the job. We'll take the vote.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Mock?
No.
Onstead?
Yes.
Vigasaw?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Herbley?
Aye.
Heckelman?
Aye.
Holmberg?
Aye.
Klein?
Aye.
Schneider.
Okay. All right. The Next presentation is a rule amendment to the filing of legislative documents with the Secretary of State. Is that what we have in our...
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. You okay. have...
Do you have it in front of you, a handout? I see nothing added, just something
struck. Something struck. It's an amendment to House and Senate Rules 203. And under each of them, the Secretary of the Senate and the Clerk of the House at the end of each session are required by this rule to deposit for safekeeping in the office of the Secretary of State all books, bills, documents, resolutions, and papers in possession of the Senate, correctly recorded, labeled, folded, and classified. And that indicates the journal need not be deposited until it's indexed and completed, and that's covered in another part of the rules. But Mr. Chairman, the Secretary of State contacted us and indicated that in the years that he's been Secretary of State, this has never occurred, and that it seems that the rule might be unnecessary. And many of the bills and we're not even sure what some of the other papers in the possession of the Secretary of the Senate or the Clerk of the House means. So we prepared this for your consideration just to eliminate that requirement. Obviously, the documents that are needed for historical purposes are kept and archived appropriately. But this rule, the Secretary of State asked us to consider, have you consider removing that portion since nothing ever has been deposited with him other than the things that are otherwise required.
We were just trying to keep the clutter out of his office. That was a joke, by the way, because he'll be down here in 5 minutes now. Any thoughts on that? It makes sense to me. Sometimes we have these old rules and we've never done them, and they are properly archived by us when they're completed. What would be a negative to this, John? Anything that would cause a problem?
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware of anything that would cause a problem. As you know, we indicated everything that needs to be kept appropriately and archived for historical purposes is this rule seems to be somewhat unnecessary and apparently is causing some heartburn.
Move to strike, Mr. Chairman. Move to strike number 11.
So you move to approve the...
Move to approve the changes.
On 101000, the first draft.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. We'll take a vote.
Representatives Carlson?
Yes.
Mock?
Aye.
Onstead?
Yes.
Vigasa?
Yes.
Senators Wardner?
Aye.
Erbely?
Aye.
Heckman? Yes. Holmberg? Klein?
Aye.
Schneider?
Aye.
All right, Chairman.
All right, the discussion of legislative rules. I'm assuming, Mr. Bjornson, you have some information for us there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, at the last meeting, you indicated that you would postpone consideration to get more input on a couple rules. I have nothing further to provide to you. Representative Onstead, I believe, had some proposals.
Representative Onstead.
Thank you, Mr.
You have some information for us,
Chairman. There's two quick handouts and just kind of revisit what we talked about last session or our last meeting. As those are going out, recall we talked about Rule 308. That was our conference committees. We've kind of in agreement that the rule is really clear. In conference committee, amendments can be added need to be on topic. Reason why we're having that conference committee and amendments that way. And so although we're not asking any change in Rule 308, we are really talking about staying on point with 308. The two handouts you have before you is...
We have 329. And if you go down to page 1, House and Senate Rules 329, upon referral of a bill to Appropriations Committee, the chairman or member duly appointed shall ensure that the prime sponsor of the bill is notified of the re-referral and at the time of the hearing. I would like to further add to that that prime sponsor, if requested, should be allowed to testify on that particular bill, and further state that many times, not many, but it does happen, a bill that's re-referred to appropriations, the chairman of that policy committee presents that bill. The chairman isn't always the one that supported that bill in policy being referred. So part of that discussion is that the person presenting the bill that's re-referred to appropriations should have voted for the bill in the policy committee. And so that's Rule 329, and open for discussion at that, and we can take up the other handout in a few minutes.
Any discussion, comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Hickman.
Well, I think that this is really important, and the fact that we had this come up last session with a bill on autism, and the bill was presented. I wasn't even aware it was a bill that I was working on, and I wasn't even aware that it came to appropriations. And when I found out at the last minute and went down to House Appropriations to testify on the bill, the chairman of the Education Committee where the bill came through came and testified and wasn't really clear on some of the information and the background of that because he was not the sponsor of the bill. And I think sometimes it's important to give a few minutes of background on why this bill came through and what it actually does and what the committee should be looking on as an appropriations committee. And that's why I think it's important that at least the prime sponsor have an opportunity. They may not always take that opportunity or want to take that opportunity, but if they do have, I mean, I think it should be open to them. I don't think it takes a long time, and I think that there would be time saved in appropriations if that prime sponsor would be allowed to testify and answer a few questions. So what I had to do then, or what I didn't have to do, but what I did is I contacted other members of the Appropriations Committee and spent my time then trying to clarify understanding of what that bill really meant. So I think that this would actually be a time saver for legislators and get the correct information on what a bill is. And I understand everybody in appropriations has a time crunch, but this may actually be a time saver.
We have our two chairmen of appropriations here. Senator Holmberg, I'd like to have you comment on this rule change that they're proposing. And that would be 329 on the sheet.
Yeah, I was.
Get a long sheet, right in your left, right hand.
It is not an issue as far as the Senate. We have a different team because obviously. My recollection is it's not an issue. It's more an issue in the House, I think.
Representative Delzer?
Right.
I know you weren't expecting to be called on today, but it's your committee to get these, and it does go through a subcommittee on our side first.
We don't.
Not all of them go to the subcommittee. There are times they go directly to the big committee. So it depends on the bill and the issue.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Delzer, legislator at District 8. You know, we're talking about re-referred bills that show up a lot of times really late in the game, come out of policy committee. Many of them we do not send to sections. If a bill is something that probably needs a little more look, we try to send it to a section because they have a little more time and can work it into their things. We don't even have the opportunity necessarily to know until a day before which bills we're going to hear. And we don't open a hearing because, and frankly, if you open the hearing, even for the prime sponsor, you have to allow everybody who has an interest. And I don't know how on the House side we'd ever have time enough to do that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Representative Delzer, the intent of that is that the prime sponsor just be notified. Is that not...
That's not a problem, I don't think.
That well, should not be a problem.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Representative Onstead, it can be a problem because you don't necessarily know. What we normally do is we set up a day when we're going to have the A committees and a day when we have the B committees. But timing of it is the hard part because you might have a chairman who can come down at one particular time and not at another. You know, you can say we're going to do them in this order, but everybody knows how that timing works. It's just like in a regular committee, if, you know, if you set a time for your bills, which is much better, but it's hard to stay on track. And there's nothing I hate worse than a committee that sets all, you know, 11 bills starting at 8 in the morning, and you don't know where you're at. You know, so again, you have that problem. And then who is going to notify it? Our clerks are too busy. We don't have a way to do it in our system that I'm aware of. It would be really difficult for the chair or the vice chair or even the section chairs to always notify the prime.
Just to follow up with that, the fact is that looking at the prime sponsors not notified, and typically other bills when they're presented, they don't have, it doesn't seem to be any problems that your bill is going to be presented at that point. It just seems to be that can be allowed. The other part is if the prime sponsor, for example, and Chairman Carlson mentioned this, that sometimes the person presenting that bill to appropriations didn't vote for it. And I've sat on appropriations, and it's not positive to what they're dealing. And so that if that prime sponsor doesn't have that notification or have that chance to deal with that, that can be swung in there. So maybe this is a more of an inconvenience, but I think it's a more about giving notice where notice should be due.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, the biggest problem we have is we don't necessarily have those bills the week before when we do our schedule, because that's how everybody else is notified. It goes on the system when you do the schedules. And we don't necessarily have all the bills that we're going to have to work on that day. You know, they show up afterwards or whatever, and we put them on and take them because they're re-referred bills instead of bills that we're having full hearings on.
We're going to, Representative Austin, we're going to hold all of these and discuss them today and then vote on them in September. We're going to see if there's a proper way to notify it. Quite honestly, I don't have a problem with them being notified. They can sit there. I think it's still got to be the chairman's discretion whether he needs any clarification when he hears it. I mean, the chairman should have that opportunity to say, yes, the chairman carrying it just can't explain it. Well, then somebody should be asked to explain it. So, and the prime sponsor, I would hope, would be the right one. So we'll see if we can come up with something that's logical for that, because there is
on the House side especially. I mean, there's times when we've had 50 bills referred to us, bound to us with money in them, that weren't appropriations bills, and you've got a deadline to meet, and you've got to get through it. And if you reopen hearings, let's say you're not going to get up. So we'll have to kind of cook this a little bit. I don't think it's a bad idea to have that sponsor notified, see if we can work the logistics part of it out. But to reopen the hearing, we just can't do that. Not the issue. The next one, Representative
Rostedt.
You have two, right?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This kind of leads into just your prior comments. Appropriations seems to be to appropriate, and policy committee is to set some policy at that point. We're seeing that appropriations doing more policy work. And it probably should have started in that policy committee to start with. And then when the intent of certain legislation ends up in appropriation, the intent seems to have changed or reversed with amendments that definitely are 180 turnabout from that. So the point of 511 to have that discussion is that define appropriations committee and what they're supposed to deal with. I think appropriations, as it says, they deal with the dollars. Is there dollars available? And they might say no, or we can find the dollars according to that. Policy committee is to deal with policy. And part of this discussion is I think appropriations is dealing more into policy all the time, and that should have been in a policy committee to start with. And the second part and part of this change is that when something is re-referred to appropriations, there's a general intent of that appropriations. Let's deal with that intent. If it's re-referred because of a dollar matter, deal with the dollar matter, but not to change the intent of that particular legislation. So that's what we have before us, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's Rule 511, right?
Correct.
Once again, Senator Holmberg, you're in the Appropriations Chair. Your perspective on what you read there.
There are many different reasons why changes are made. There are numerous times where the chairman of the Policy Committee will come and say, you know, we really were going in this other direction and we didn't get it right. Would you please make those changes? We have had numerous occasions, I think, or a number of occasions where it comes actually from the committee back to appropriations in the Senate because they don't need the bill back. They know what they did wrong, or they know what the recommended changes could be. And I would find it awkward in that particular case. Now, is it possible that Appropriations Committee has made some changes that rub in the area of policy? I think it's happened from time to time. We don't like to do it, but sometimes it happens. But there are occasions where a policy change is made because of a request from the Policy Committee. That's why we bang on this wall here with Human Services, because we get a lot of those folks come rushing over, you know, asking for the changes.
Any comment, Representative Delzer? While we're talking about appropriations, and you're in the room.
Well, Mr. Chairman, committee members, as Senator Holmberg stated, but there's also times when the policy drives the money, and the money drives the policy. And you don't have enough money to do the policy the way it comes, but you do have enough money to do parts of that policy. You know, how do you make those choices? You then you're saying you either got a zero or all of it, and you can't afford to do all of it. So there's times when you're going to have to change the policy a little bit. And that's not always. You know, as Senator Holmberg said, there's times when the Appropriation Committee gets into policy that doesn't belong there at all. It might be a real close vote, whatever. Comes to the floor. The floor has a chance to separate that out and take it out. And usually that happens. You know, it happens quite often. But I don't know how you, if, and it seems to me I was here last time and Rips and On said, it seems to me that you're hoping that some of these bills would go back to policy if there's a change.
Correct.
The real question, who makes that decision of whether that's a policy change or a money change? And that's the problem we have with all of it, is what's policy and what's money.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Holbert.
But then if there's a disagreement, then the body could send it back to the committee.
You
I mean, by the body, I mean the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate.
Mr. Chairman, you could certainly do that, but we are.
I mean, I'm not advocating it, but that could be.
We are restricted to 80 days, you know, and we're finding ourselves having a hard time getting stuff through in that amount of time already. I don't know how you would, you know, most of the policy committees by that time have even finished a lot of their conference committees. You know, they would have time to work on it. But what's going to happen then if they change something and it makes a difference on appropriations again? Does it have to come back to appropriations again then? So that's just some of the questions of how you would deal with this.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
If you read the law or the rule 511, unless necessitated by consideration appropriation contained in the measure. And so if reason why it's being referred is because there's a cost to it of over $5,000 and there must be a fiscal note attached to it and it got re-referred to appropriations. So you look at that and you look at the dollar amount, either agree to the dollar amount or change the dollar amount or find out where the dollars have come from a different source, but not to add language to it to that point. It seems to me that's the interpretation of the rule, and that's the part that we are changing. And so if it is being, why is it being referred? Because there's a dollar amount attached to it. So you either agree or disagree or change the dollar amount and then move it back.
But again, Mr. Chairman, that policy might very well, the way it's worded, not fit the money that's available. You know, and I don't know how you make that fine of a line. And it's always been, you know, we've served, everybody here has served for quite a few years, and it's always been a question of who's dealing with what. You know, and I don't know how you're going to get away from that.
Well, it's always been the status that policy can add money, but appropriations can't add policy. And that's been the philosophy of every policy committee. Is that we can add money, even if it doesn't fit the budget, but the policy, the appropriations committee better not be messing with my policy, even though it's full of money. So it's inherent that somebody has to balance the budget. I don't know if it's right or wrong what you're saying about the timeline, if we could even make those days work. But this is something we'll consider. We'll vote on this in the next meeting, because I think you have to look, will it logistically work or won't it? When you look at our schedule, again, the last 3 weeks of the session, will this work to send it back and have that two-day timeline in there? I think there might be some logistic problems in there, but policy and money are always going to intersect in this place. I think when you have a sponsor, you know, the first step you already introduced. Should the sponsor be notified when the bill is sitting down there and doesn't even know that they're changing it or doing something to it? Legitimate points. Well, the two-day thing worked. I'm not sure, but those two are always going to interject, but one of them is going to add money, but they don't really know if it fits in the budget or not, so that's always going to be a conflict. And is it a worthy discussion? We have it every session. I think it's worthy discussion, Mr. Chairman. The I
agree with the intent to what you're saying at that point. But what happens is in a session, so much ends up back in conference committee. And so it seems to me that so much legislation is being done in that last 3 weeks of the session in conference committee, when in fact you either can agree to an amount
and we hear it all the time that, well, we made some changes because this is going to end up in conference committee anyway. Well, it seems to me the idea is, why are you forcing back to conference committee? There's a dollar amount, is there an agreement? And if we were concerned about days, and we talk about days and length of days and so on, well, then make the point that, well, everything goes to conference committee. Well, look how long that would deal with that. And so my point is, if we want to become a little more efficient, this is one of the things I think has to be considered, become a little more efficient at that point where appropriations deal with appropriations. Don't spend your time on that policy. And if something comes to both House and Senate appropriations, is there a dollar amount that can be agreed upon before it has to always end up in conference committee? And that's what stands out the legislative day, is so much emphasis is put on the conference committee, takes away from the public. So my concern, and I look forward to the discussion in September.
Okay. Any member, we're going to take this up. You got any ideas or thoughts you've got between now and September to work with John, modifications, adjustments, or whatever you think, Senator Holmberg, Representative Ellsworth, if you have ideas or thoughts, but we're going to take it up and vote on it at our next meeting. Anything else, Representative Munster, did you have?
No.
All I know is it's been an age-old issue.
Well, it's no, and I understand that, and we always had debate about days and how can we make things a little more efficient, and I guess I think this is a way to streamline the, and yet still be very transparent in front of the public.
All I know is that in my years here, I've realized that policy does a lot to change money. Things cost money. When you put in bills, they cost money. If somebody's got to balance it out, we have to find that happy medium along the way.
Good afternoon, Chairman Carlson, members of Legislative Procedures and Management Committee. For the record, my name is John Boyle, Director of Facility Management, Office of Management and Budget. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to update you on capital projects. Throughout the capital grounds, we have five that we've already completed. Terrazzo repair, cleaning in the Capitol Tower, legislative wing and judicial wing, limestone cleaning and restoration. We've done repairs to the legislative parking lot. We finished this Capitol parking lot project, and we finished our like six phase heat pump replacement project, which replaced 500 heat pumps throughout the tower and the legislative wing. We have seven projects that we're currently working on. The first one, of course, is the new governor's residence. That'll go out to bid tomorrow. We'll have all the bids July 21st, and then we'll have what's called the guaranteed maximum price from the construction manager at risk, which we'll have signed by the last week of July. Then the fence and trailer and trees will come down. Site work will begin that first week of August. Next week, or after the 4th of July on the 6th, we're going to be removing the stones on Memorial Stairs, the plaza out here, putting down a new rubber membrane, replace the stones. That'll stop all the water from flowing into the underneath the Porte Cochere where you drive through. That's about a five-month project. The electrical upgrade project at the West End.
You know, we're trying to burn down the Senator Snyder's office.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Yeah. That's that project.
Notice I didn't say he tried to burn it down. Yeah. The time I said where someone did.
I've gotten over the media.
Yeah. That'll be done by the end of August, that project. The legislative media room renovation, that'll be done in the next couple weeks. We're remodeling all the bathrooms down at the state office building. That goes out to bid on Thursday the 30th, and that's about a three-month project. We have entrance signs, pathway signs, building identification signs. We're in the process of selecting an architect for that. So that'll be done
probably after legislative session, those signs will start going up. And then the three legislative hearing rooms down in the judicial wing, that project will be done probably at the end of August. And then I also have Tom Jobe here, so when we do a tour, he can get us into all those areas and show us those. So with that, that kind of concludes my remarks.
I have a couple questions
for you. Sure.
Like I always do.
Yes, sir.
The legislative wing custodian retired.
Oh, yeah, maintenance, and Joe Schatz.
It's all locked up, and I'm not sure if we even have a maintenance guy over there. What's going on?
Mr. Chairman, we are going to have a person, we'll actually probably have three people assigned to that project, because of course, when you guys are here,